From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on June 26, 2015, in the United States Supreme Court. The court decided on a case called Obergefell versus Hodges. The short description of Obergefell is this. It's the case that cemented same-sex marriage on the federal level. It was a 5-4 decision, with Justice Anthony Kennedy authoring the majority opinion, joined by Justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, Sonia Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan. The majority held that state same-sex marriage bans are a violation of the 14th Amendment's Due Process and Equal Protection Clauses. Here's what Kennedy wrote, quote, "The Constitution promises liberty to all within its reach, a liberty that includes certain specific rights that allow persons within a lawful realm to define and express their identity. No union is more profound than marriage, for it embodies the highest ideals of love, fidelity, devotion, sacrifice, and family. In forming a marital union, two people become something greater than once they were. As some of the petitioners in these cases demonstrate, marriage embodies a love that may endure even past death. It would misunderstand these men and women to say they disrespect the idea of marriage. Their plea is that they do respect it so deeply that they seek to find its fulfillment for themselves. Their hope is not to be condemned to live in loneliness, excluded from one of civilization's oldest institutions. They ask for equal dignity in the eyes of the law. The Constitution grants them that right." End quote. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote a dissenting opinion. Roberts stated that no prior decision had changed the core component of marriage, that it be between one man and one woman. Consequently, same-sex marriage bans did not violate the Due Process Clause, Justice Roberts argued. Roberts also rejected the notion that same-sex marriage bans violated a right to privacy. Regarding the institution of marriage, Roberts wrote that it always had a universal definition, one man, one woman, and arose to ensure for the most successful possible way of raising children. And Justice Roberts criticized Justice Kennedy for relying on his own personal views and moral convictions as opposed to searching for a constitutional basis for same-sex marriage. Finally, Justice Roberts warned that same-sex marriage could pave the way for legalized polygamy. All of which is now settled history, though. Or is it? This week, Justices Thomas and Alito made clear that they're not done with the question of same-sex marriage. As reported by NPR and the New York Times, Justices Thomas and Alito appeared to urge the court on Monday to reconsider this case, which they said had invented a right with no basis in the Constitution. The justices wrote this week, quote, "By choosing to privilege a novel constitutional right over the religious liberty interests explicitly protected in the First Amendment, and by doing so undemocratically, the court has created a problem that only it can fix," end quote. Well, how to fix it? Presumably by examining a new case that could lead to the overturning of Obergefell. Justices Thomas and Alito write that the 2015 decision stigmatizes people of faith. They write, quote, "Obergefell enables courts and governments to brand religious adherents who believe that marriage is between one man and one woman as bigots, making their religious liberty concerns that much easier to dismiss. Since Obergefell, parties have continually attempted to label people of goodwill as bigots merely for refusing to alter their religious beliefs in the wake of prevailing orthodoxy," end quote. Which leads us to this current moment, with Amy Coney Barrett nominated to take the Supreme Court seat that had been filled by Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Barrett holds conservative religious values and is viewed as a likely vote to overturn Obergefell should it come to that, and that would dismantle federal protections for same-sex marriage. This hour, we discuss what that could mean for couples and for this country. Our guests include Tamara Lee, founder and lead consultant for Blackout Consultants and editor of Blackout Magazine. Tamara, welcome back to the program.
Hi, thank you so much.
Scott Falkowski is a guest services manager at Geva Theater Center. Scott, welcome. Nice to have you.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
I think we've had your worst half on this program, but this is the first time talking to you.
That's correct. You've had him a couple different times.
He's not your worst half. I'm mostly kidding. Reverend Barbara Adams, welcome back to the program, Reverend. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Evan. Happy to be here again.
And Roz Pallera is with us as well. Hi, Roz.
Hi, Evan. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Barbara and Roz, Reverend, remind our listeners how long you and Roz have been together.
Over 30 years, Evan.
nice to have you. And we're going to talk to you about not only how you see this case and possible implications of overturning Obergefell, but also the notion of religious freedom. Let me start. We'll just go down the list here. Tamara Lee, when you hear what Justices Alito and Thomas wrote this week about Obergefell and also the idea that the 2015 decision stigmatizes people of faith who are good people who simply believe that marriage is one man, one woman, and it makes them out to be bigots, and we've got to change that. Are they bigots? What do you make of what you heard from the justices this week, Tamara?
Well, I mean, I think it's all terrifying. Honestly, I think that the Black community, the LGBTQ community, is kind of living in fear across the board with the administration that we have right now. The idea that things like Roe versus Wade and the Marriage Equality Act are in jeopardy, it's terrifying. It's horrifying. With the last quote, I think that it's very, I think that that's kind of the problem that we're living under, is the fact that we have this idea that you can be homophobic or you could be racist and be a good person. And I challenge people to say that, you know, cognitive dissonance allows people to think that that's the case. But if you're challenging people's right to live, right to love, right to exist, right to be who they are, then that automatically qualifies you as a bad person. I don't think that you can separate the two, although people, you know, psychologically would like to. I think that it automatically makes that null and void. It's a scary, scary time that we're living in. There's been so many trans rights issues that have been rolling back the things that we fought so hard to accomplish, to keep people safe, to keep people able to live their life as who they choose to be. We've seen over the last 4 years that disappearing, and this is just such a huge representation of the rights that are eroding and that are possibly still in jeopardy.
Scott Filkowski, what do you think?
I agree. I think it's a terrifying time. When I heard the news coming out about Thomas and Alito, that I just got a knot in my stomach. These were things that I fought for years. Before it was federally recognized, I was living down in New York City, and we were fighting down there for the Marriage Equality Act. After that came through, you know, that was a good step in the right direction. But when it is federally recognized, that's really when we sort of were able to take maybe a small breath. And, you know, Dan and I getting together, we were, part of it was, you know, the commitment to one another, but it's also the rights and privileges that marriage allows people to have. That was one of the things that we were really, you know, that was really important to us. So having this in jeopardy, it's really terrifying.
We're going to talk about that coming up here. Couples like Scott and Dan, you know, how they see this case not only impacting their capacity to be married, and we'll talk about states' rights too, but potentially couples like Scott and Dan, what it means if they could not remain married, and what it would mean on the legal side of things. And as Scott mentions, there's a domino effect, and we will talk about that coming up. Reverend Adams, what do you make of the notion that the justices Alito and Thomas are concerned about the branding of certain religious people as bigots simply because of their religious beliefs? Reverend?
Yes, I'm here, Evan. I have the copy of the outline that was sent to me, and one of the words that I circled here is bigots. And I'm really sorry to see that, because I think what we need to look at is the rights of all, the freedom for all, and equality for all. And I think any time we start brandishing others with negative terms, we take away the humanity of who they are and cover over the rights that each of us deserves.
Roz, how do you see this?
Looking at the word bigot, I don't see where in Obergefell bigot was used anywhere. I think they have used this word for its connotation. Let's get back to the Constitution a minute. The Constitution is almost being used as a revolving door, from what I can see. and the definitions of certain words are being expanded beyond probably what the forefathers ever imagined. And by the way, they were forefathers. You know, we needed a couple women in there to insert maybe some details or maybe some other sides to what is going on. Nonetheless, the Constitution awards freedom of religion to a person. And person is a very important word here because previously in some of these court cases, for example, Hobby Lobby, a corporation was treated as a person. It was a closed corporation capable of making certain decisions, which Hobby Lobby jumped into, not allowing women to have certain insurance rights that other corporations were mandated by law to present. So getting back to my original, the Constitution is being used as a revolving door in and out. And right now, Clarence Thomas and Judge Alito are opening the door from Obergefell and sticking in certain things like bigots.
Well, let me read what Jim Obergefell himself told NPR this week. He, of course, was the lead plaintiff in that 2015 case that bore his name, and he said Monday's opinion from Justices Alito and Thomas was deeply disturbing and upsetting. He told NPR, quote, Justices Thomas and Alito seem to imply that freedom of religion carries more weight, is more important than all other rights, end quote. And James Essex is a lawyer with the ACLU. He told NPR that the justice's statement was shocking, if not unsurprising. He told NPR, quote, it is appalling that 5 years after a historic decision like Obergefell, two justices still consider same-sex couples less worthy of marriage than other couples, end quote. The ACLU considers this very much the kind of case that a conservative Supreme Court would seek to overturn. So for all the talk that Amy Coney Barrett's possible ascension to the Supreme Court brings regarding Roe v. Wade, no matter what side of Roe you're on, that's not the only case and really landmark decision that could be flipped here. Next month, the court's going to hear arguments about the role religious objections can play in excluding same-sex parents from a foster care program. So there's a lot of things in play here, even before Amy Coney Barrett is possibly on the court, but certainly in the very near future here. And Tamara, what about the notion of states' rights here? I mean, the pushback that conservatives tend to make in this case with Obergefell is pretty similar to what you hear in Roe. And it sounds something like this. Okay, if you want abortion rights, states can pass that. And if states don't want that, states can ban that. If you want same-sex marriage, states can pass that. If they don't, they can ban it. It should be up to individual states to decide, and we'll have a patchwork, and people will have to make decisions on where they want to be. What do you make of that, Tamara?
I don't know. I think it's all still scary. Like someone had said earlier, you know, we worked really hard in New York State to get marriage equality passed here, and that's great. But until the national standard supported it, it certainly didn't really, I think, make people comfortable that those statutes were secure. In addition to the fact, like, I know people, I have many friends in the trans community who have to choose where they live in the country based on what rights they are afforded in those places. Mm-hmm. And to be able to limit people's ability to live somewhere in the country, to take a job, to move to a different place that they may want to experience based on the fact that they, you know, may not be able to change their name with their transition, that they may not have medical rights based on their transition. I mean, I think that once again, is just an eroding away at people's American right to exist.
Okay. Scott Filkowski, same question. And I ask, you know, thinking about the story that you told about the work that you've done and what you and Dan had hoped and what it means to you. What do you say now to those who say, look, you can still marry him. It just depends on where. In New York State, you probably don't have to move. So big deal for you. What do you say to that argument?
Well, it's the people that don't live in New York State. It's the people that are living in a state that would ban it, that are currently married. And what does that mean for them? It gets down to things such as somebody's living in a state and they take away those rights. You know, your partner could be in the hospital and you're not admitted in. You could be with this person for 20, 30, 40 years, and they don't have to let you in that hospital room. You don't have the right to make life-saving decisions for them. I have friends who have children. It means, what does that mean? If one's a biological parent and one is not, then they have to go through the courts. There has to be proceedings to have that child adopted by the second parent. All of these rights disappear, and it's just scary.
Reverend Adams, how do you feel about the notion of allowing states to decide and having a patchwork on this issue?
Well, I think any time we have a patchwork throughout the United States, we have issues. And I'm happy to hear what Tamara had to say. But we have patchwork with COVID right now, and we see how this is panning out for us. You know, we don't change who we are when we cross the border from one state to another. So I think there needs to be a unified address to this. There need to be unified laws around our issues here. And there need to be understandings and dialogues to break down so much of the bigotry and the misunderstandings that individuals have about the LGBTQ community and more specifically about individuals. And these need to involve families, need to involve family members. And one of the things that I did before coming on call today, Evan, was that I contacted a number of our friends who are in same-sex marriages and who have adopted children. And I'm hoping that they call in because these are loving individuals. These are beautiful parents to see how they have nurtured their children. These are thriving individual children who are contributing members of our society. And this doesn't just exist in Rochester, New York. It's throughout our country. And for people to have an understanding of really the love, the care, and the way that these families are, and we, our family, Roz's and my family, are bringing up our kids is not just a state question. It's a national question. So I don't think it should be patchwork.
Roz, you want to add to that?
Yes, I definitely do. With deep regard for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I offer a page maybe from her book of metaphors. Let's make motor vehicles a patchwork system. So that, you know, I have a plate from New York State on my car, and when I drive into Pennsylvania, I'm going to have to take that plate off and register in Pennsylvania and drive through and then do the same thing in Ohio. How wonderful. What a wonderful journey across the country. No, there are certain things that the federal government has to just grab by the throat and determine. And that's it. And this is one of those things. We can't have states' rights work as we do the Electoral College, for example. Not with these kinds of rights. These are civil rights that each person is allowed by the Constitution. Liberty. Liberty. Liberty.
Listeners, if you want to call the program and weigh in, you can do that by calling 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. It's 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Or you can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. If you're just joining us, two justices on the United States Supreme Court said on Monday, and that would be Justices Thomas and Alito, they said on Monday in an opinion on a case that was not necessarily about same-sex marriage, they took the opportunity to take a shot at the 2015 decision, the Obergefell case, which paved federal protection and federal support for equal marriage. And the justices said on Monday that that was a flawed case, and the only way to fix it is the court has to fix it, that it makes religious people look like bigots. And essentially, those justices reaffirmed their view of marriage as one man, one woman. So, you know, if you remember 5 years ago when there was a lot of love and celebration about that case, there was also a feeling that the work was not over. And in our second half hour, we're going to talk about that, because even some gay advocates like Andrew Sullivan, who've been writing for years in support of equal marriage, he's written pieces in the last 5 years saying that the LGBTQ plus movement needs to know when to say we've won and to sort of back off a bit. Well, we're looking at a possibility that a Supreme Court could overturn Obergefell and flip equal marriage, to say nothing of some of the other issues that Tam and others have brought up. So that's what we're talking about. And let me take our first phone call. This is Rich in Rochester. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Evan?
Good, sir.
Rich, on you, Benny.
Well, the first thing I have to say is that, so what they're saying is that gay people and LGBTQ people aren't citizens of the United States. They'll be the citizens of New York, New Jersey, California, wherever.
Excellent.
That's the first and foremost.
Yes.
Secondly, is these arguments are old arguments. These things of, oh, I'm not a bigot because I'm against interracial marriage. It says in the Bible that you shouldn't do this. Every time bigotry is challenged, people try to use a religious argument to hide behind. Bigotry is bigotry. Hate is hate. I don't care who you are or how you couch it. And these two justices are doing the same thing. It's actually bull. And they really don't have an argument. But I just hope that it takes long enough that a case gets to the Supreme Court, that it gets to the point that it becomes such a default position. How can they argue against it? But that's, I think, that will be our saving grace. Well, I'm not a citizen of New York. I'm the citizen of the United States. And also, wasn't the state's right argument settled with 700,000 dead Americans 135 years ago? 145 years ago?
Rich, I as always, I appreciate the phone call, and I'm going to turn to Reverend Barbara Adams just to ask you briefly. I mean, Rich is invoking past opposition to interracial marriage, past bigotry in different ways, and the often used biblical justification. Reverend, are there biblical passages that make you uncomfortable? I mean, how do you have that discussion with people who say, well, look, I'm just a religious conservative. These are my values.
Evan, as you may know, I'm a non-denominational minister. I was brought up, however, in the traditional Catholic Church. And the traditional Catholic Church, way back in the day, and still in some instances, still holds homosexuality as a sin. And we are seen as reprobates. We have no redeeming values. To those who question what's biblically written, often quoted as Leviticus. Now, I'm not a biblical scholar. You know, Leviticus has so many condemnations about homosexuality. But there's also, you know, the counter arguments in there. If we're going to quote the Bible, and again, I'm not a biblical scholar, then we need to look at all of the passages in the Bible and not just pick and choose. Because among those are such things as, should we be wearing clothes of different fabrics? Should we be eating certain meats? Should there be slavery, for instance, which was condoned? So regarding biblical references, again, we can't pick and choose. And we have to remember when the Bible was written and the kinds of societies which were very much not educated in farms in terms of formal education. And it was quite male-dominated. There was not the female voice that was often part of this. And any dissenters were closed out of the conversation. So that would be my response to that, Evan. And in terms of interracial marriage, if we're going to quote that, and we're going to look at Justice Thomas, then I think we're looking at an interracial marriage right there.
Well, and Tamara Lee, do you think Rich on the phone has a point there that throughout history, discrimination has been given some religious backing to make it seem valid or protected?
Absolutely. I think that you can make the Bible support any argument that you choose to. If you, just like she just said, you know, you can, you can't pick and choose it. I think that if we were using the Bible as a punishable document, most of us would be incarcerated at this point. So to pick and choose which one of those passages that, that you decide is damning material is kind of ludicrous at this point. The things that she listed, and there's like 1,000 more things that are just literally things that we do every day. Divorce would be a punishable offense. You would, I think there's a passage of people being stoned if they remarry. Like, you know, you can't, I think that hate groups find documents that are widely accepted and widely embraced like the Bible, and they use that to prove whatever point that they choose to. I have heard the KKK use the Bible as justification for racism. And if that's not tolerated, which clearly it shouldn't be, I'm not sure why this would be any different.
All right. I want to take our only break of the hour. When we come back, I want to ask, we're going to ask Scott Filkowski, one of our guests, just about how he sees possible rights and capacities of married couples to essentially enjoy the benefits of marriage, how that's threatened for gay couples if Obergefell is overturned, the 2015 U.S. Supreme Court case that affirmed equal marriage on a federal level. We've got two justices now saying it's time to go after Obergefell and overturn it. Amy Coney Barrett is a likely joiner of a decision like that in the future, given her values and statements publicly. And so we're talking about what that could mean for gay couples across this country. Our guests are, let me run down the list here, and then we'll take more of your phone calls as well in our second half hour. Tamara Lee is the founder and lead consultant for Blackout Consultants and the editor of Blackout Magazine. Scott Filkowski is guest services manager at Jiva Theater Center. And Barb and Roz are with us, Reverend Barbara Adams and Roz Palera, back with us telling their story and sharing their perspective. Let's take that only break of the hour now on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, would you vote Libertarian this year? Would you vote Green? Would you vote for another third party? Or do you have a problem with third parties? Well, there are new rules in New York State about third party viability. And those who run third parties, the Greens, the Libertarians, and more, they say it's unfair. This could be the end of third parties in New York State. What are those rules? Are they fair? Let's talk about it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So Scott Filkowski, let's talk about a country in which equal marriage is overturned, and in many states there is not an option legally for gay couples to marry. For you, if you were living in one of those states, what would start to change, Scott?
So if you look at the opinion of the court for the decision made, the federal decision made, it says these aspects of marital status include taxation, inheritance and property rights, rules of interstate succession, spousal privilege in the law of evidence, hospital access, medical decision-making authority, adoption rights, the rights and benefits of survivors, birth and death certificates, professional ethics rules, campaign finance restrictions, workers' compensation benefits, health insurance, and child custody support and visitation rules. All of those things would be in jeopardy. So looking at that, I mean, that's a lot of privileges that are afforded to people that are married throughout the United States. And as I mentioned before, a big thing, say Dan and I are here in New York State, we're all set, we're fine, but we want to do a cross-country trip. What happens if one of us gets sick? We go in the hospital, something detrimental happens, one of us is not able to make decisions for the other, we're kept out of the hospital. The property rights, if a spouse dies, who has the rights to, you know, you put a lot, half of your life, your savings, everything into that, that's in jeopardy. And then if there's children involved, I mean, that gets very complicated. It's what does that mean for, you know, if it's a biological child to one parent and not the other? That becomes very complicated. Lawyers have to be brought in, and a lot of money needs to be spent to have equal rights that are not granted if this is taken away.
So, Scott, let me ask all of you, and I'll start with you then, this and then, Scott, because 5 years ago, again, you know, this Obergefell case goes through the U.S. Supreme Court. It's a 5-4 decision. There is an understandable feeling of relief and celebration, a lot of joy, a lot of tears. And then, you know, on this program, we've talked to many people in the movement who have talked about what the next sort of fronts of equality look like. Whereas you had authors and writers like Andrew Sullivan saying, look, I'm gay, I'm married, it's over, we got it, we won. We have to know when to declare victory here. We're not going back. Is there any part of you, Scott, that feels like that this couldn't happen, that marriage couldn't be taken away, that when rights are achieved, rights are essentially in stone? Or have you always felt like things were sort of tenuous and possibly threatened?
I feel like things are always tenuous and can be threatened. Just knowing through my own personal experiences with other people, it's knowing different views and opinions, people who disagree with my lifestyle. It's always been something that I felt like we could never take our eye off of. As we move forward, there always needs to be that we need to be cautious and we need to be vigilant. And we know what can happen. I mean, Roe versus Wade, that's been, you know, people have been talking about that since that has happened. And how many years has that been? So it's something we always need to keep our eye on. And we need to, like I said, be vigilant about it. And so while we could, you know, I absolutely say celebrate that victory that we had. But
if
people that say,
to me,
you know,
first, I may then say,
go ahead, Scott.
It's, you know, people that, you know, say that it was a victory, move on. It's, I don't think we can ever fully move on. We always need to keep an eye out on that. People said, you know, in our current political environment, oh, you know, when certain people are elected, it's like, you don't have to worry about that. Like, things aren't going to happen. Well, here we are 3.5 years later, things are happening. There's consequences. So I think it's, you know, for us, we're always vigilant, always keeping an open ear, have an eye on the ball. So I, for us, we're, you know, celebrate those victories, but always remain conscious of what's happening.
Yeah, and Tamara Lee, when we look at polling in this country, the polling in the last 2 decades, just on equal marriage, has flipped. I mean, it was at the beginning of this century, it was very much, you know, sort of in the 2/3, 1/3 camp against, and now it's flipped. So if the court went against that, they'd be going against established sort of public opinion that's only been moving more in that direction. And that's true of younger Republicans and self-identified conservatives, too. And that's why I think since 2015, Tam, a lot of people have assumed that, okay, well, there's going to be other fronts in the fight for equality, but marriage is pretty well set here. This isn't going back. That now appears to be pretty naive. And I'm always, you know, on guard for my own naivete. How do you see that?
I'm actually so glad you sort of brought up that question. I think that it's important to mention that through many LGBTQ communities of color, the fight for marriage equality was very much a white LGBTQ issue, because as much of a success as that was, and I certainly think we all believe it's important to be able to marry, that fight happened and it won, and a lot of the LGBTQ community that was fighting stopped fighting because that's what they were shooting for. Whereas in the QTPOC community, the queer and trans people of color community, the fight never stopped because we still were fighting for our lives. Like, there's been more transgender people of color, black transgender women murdered in the last 3 years than there ever have been in the last 5 years than there ever have been in the history of recorded numbers. So our fight never stops because we're still fighting for employment rights, for housing rights, you know, the things like gender that have passed in New York State that they don't exist in the rest of the country and how detrimental that is. So the biggest reason why this fight and the potential of this being turned around is so terrifying to me personally is because this would only be the beginning. You overturn this, and then what's next? The Davis versus Emerald case of the woman in Kentucky who didn't want to sign and issue marriage certificates. Like, those things are still happening today. 5 years after this passed, it's still existing in 2020. So without even this beginning protection, what happens to all of the people and all of the things that are any way related to this sort of case? And once we start eroding, you know, this big win, then what falls after that when there's so many people still currently today fighting for their lives?
Well, let me turn to Roz Pallera for her thoughts on this. Go ahead, Roz.
Well, there is one thing that I would like to mention, and then I'd like to get on to another thing. Kim Davis was the woman. She was the clerk who was involved in this case that has been not taken up by the court because it does not cleanly present the issues in the court's decision. Nonetheless, Kim Davis, in case you would like to know, has been married four times, this religious woman, to three husbands. That's just a little tidbit. I'd like to go back to Scott, if I may. Scott, you did a wonderful job in laying out what would happen, what rights we would lose. It was an expansive list. Excellent. There is one thing that I think about, however, and that's almost akin to the right to breathe. As a lesbian woman who now has civil rights, I can go outside and I can walk tall and I can breathe. If my rights were taken away, I could see my shoulders drop. I could see where Barb and I could not walk down the street and hold hands. I could see where we could go to a nightclub and we, you know, really couldn't even toast each other. I mean, the life would be a life half lived. A life lived undercover, a life lived having to play it straight. I don't want that life, and you don't want that life. And I think that any listener, anybody who has a thinking mind doesn't want that kind of life. So, yes, we have to keep our eye on the ball all the time. There's power out there. There are movements in the world toward nationalism. There's politics, and these people are going to wind their way and manipulate our lives whenever they can. So once again, we have to keep our eye on the ball.
Barb, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I'm looking over at my honey, and I'm smiling, and I'm so proud of what she just shared, my Roz. You know, it's like... We always have to look over our shoulder. We have been given rights by the courts, sort of, you know. It's as though, and as Roz said, when can we, you know, it goes through our heads, when can we hold hands out in public? When can we give each other a little kiss out in public? When can we do that and feel absolutely free? And I don't know if that day will ever be here. And whether this case is eroded, I think it's just a matter of time. And I'm sorry to say that, because look at the jeopardy right now that Roe v. Wade is in. I think anything that has been granted to individuals, to couples, is in jeopardy. And I think we have to be ever vigilant of our politicians that we vote in and out of office. I think we have to be very active. We have to be proactive. We have to speak up at times when it may place us in jeopardy. And I know that I still question my right to speak up. As much of an activist as I feel that I am, I still feel that I have to question, do I have the right to speak up? And how is this going to jeopardize my relationship with Roz? How is this going to jeopardize my children, my grandchildren? I don't think that straight couples or individuals have to think that way. And I can feel my blood pressure rising right now and my heart rate increasing because how this affects our daily lives, our safety, our security, and our rights.
Well, let me read some feedback from listeners. Bess says, So many federal laws come with marriage. Social Security, pensions, so much at stake. State by state will not work. We've been down that road before. Michael says, Jesus never said a word about abortion or homosexuality. He did talk a lot about love, peace, forgiveness, turning the other cheek, and feeding the poor. Evangelicals ignore those parts of his teaching. Peter says, at the end of the day, the concept of marriage is as much based in love as it is civil structure. I know Scott personally. I've seen the extent of the love he has for those in his life. To say that he cannot enjoy the civil structure of marriage with the person he loves, a consenting adult at that, is to say that his love and value as a person is lower than mine because of his sexual preference and identity. For people to accept that as an option puts into question anyone else that society considers different, even if they've always been a part of it. That is from Peter. Let me grab a phone call from Steven. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Evan. Love your show. Yeah, this is a very important topic. And I wanted to also mention that there are a lot of couples, such as myself, that are international couples. My husband is from Brazil, and we've been kind of back and forth since 2018. And with the pandemic, as you can imagine, it's been especially complicated. Mm-hmm. He's stuck in immigration limbo. It's super frustrating, super heartbreaking. And the idea that this could all be taken away, our rights could be taken away, is a whole other level of stress. And it's just really something that heterosexual couples don't need to deal with. You know, nobody should have to deal with it. But it's just something for people to be aware of. Marriage really does matter. You know, we can't just have some sort of civil union or state level thing. We need a nationally recognized thing permanently in place. And it's just really frustrating and really, really difficult, you know?
Well, and so Stephen, a couple of things, and I'll ask you and then I'll ask our guest can weigh in. I want to read another email I got in just a moment here. I will say that I think based on looking at the dial, you're one of the Stevens who emails with regularity and one of the really smart listeners we have who makes the show smarter. And I'm really grateful for that.
Thanks.
And I think you've identified yourself generally as sort of a political moderate. But does this surprise you at all? I mean, did you feel in 2015 that at least this hurdle was overcome? I mean, is there any party that's surprised to hear the justice is saying, let's tee up another case and let's go back at this case?
You know, I am kind of surprised about it. I think most conservatives I know don't really care, frankly. Of course, we're in the Northeast, so that's a big difference. I think naively thought of this as sort of settled law, settled question, you know. Mm-hmm. And I still want to believe that will be the case. I hope it will be settled permanently. And I don't think there's much appetite in the country to have this kind of chaos. But, you know, with this administration, chaos is the name of the game, unfortunately.
Yeah, I every time I think I've got things figured out on these issues, I think, what does Tamara Lee think? And then I need to make sure that I get myself caught up. But yeah. I want to read for you, Steve, before I let you go. Let me read an email from Tim, a listener who says the following. Evan, I am okay with same-sex partners. I personally have an issue with using the term marriage. My only issue is the use of that word. I would prefer to call it something else. Call it same-sex unions. I understand the desire or the need for a legal union between partners, and I feel it should be allowed in our country for numerous reasons. We should allow benefits, home ownership, insurance, etc., all of it. But his issue is with the term marriage. Stephen, what do you say to Tim, who emails that says, hey, you should have insurance, home ownership, benefits, legal rights, everything. Just call it something else besides marriage.
Right. Well, you know, the frequent argument is that separate equal is never acceptable. Separate equal has never worked really well. And if I may, could I just quote James Baldwin real fast for you?
Sure.
Something that it says, we can disagree and still love each other, unless your disagreement is rooted in my oppression and denial of my humanity and right to exist, right? And for me personally, this really hits me really close to home. This hits me where I live. And if somebody is against my equality and my equal rights, and, you know, this hits me where I live because this is my spouse, this is my family, you know, it's just too personal. I honestly, if this ever were to happen, I would never forgive. And this is a very strong thing to say, but I don't think I could ever forgive people who supported this happening, because that's just, it's a bridge too far, you know? And I think that separate but equal has never worked. And I think that, you know, just get over it. You know, I mean, would they say the same thing to an interracial couple? I don't think so. So my response to that is, I hear what you're saying, and, you know, but just there comes a point where you just have to kind of get over it a little bit and accept that society has evolved, right?
Well, Steve, much love to you. Thanks for the call, and I always appreciate the emails from you, too.
Thank you, Evan. I love your show. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Steve calling from Henrietta. Tamara Lee, what do you make of all of that? Go ahead.
I don't know. I guess my argument has always been for people who don't agree with same-sex marriage, then they should probably not marry someone who's the same sex as them. I mean, it's kind of just as simple as that. For me, I struggle to understand why people feel like they should have a vote in other people's existence if it's not being harmful to anyone else around them. I would challenge that individual to say he can call it whatever he's comfortable calling it, and move on with his day. I don't know. It's never made sense to me. And it's just so interesting to me that we can do something like, you know, bring in a Supreme Court judge, and that can change the entire landscape of life for billions of people. Like, the idea that, you know, someone's personal interests or personal religious beliefs in a place that's supposed to have separation of church and state would even be a question. The idea that, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg can pass away and that means, like, all of the rights afforded to millions of people somehow, you know, float up into the atmosphere with her. Like, it's just, it's insanity to me. It's insanity. And to be perfectly honest, when you ask the question, if you ask someone else if they were surprised, nothing at this point surprises me. To be perfectly honest, it's like living an upside down world. It's just every day is some nutty new piece of craziness that we're all trying to figure out how that affects our every day-to-day life. And like I said, this is a really big deal. You know, I hope to marry, and I will need this law in order to do that. But this is only like the tip of the iceberg. Like, we remove this and then what's next? It's just, I feel like, you know, this was such a hard fight just to get marriage equality. So then what happens with all of these other things, and how does this affect every other piece that, you know, the LGBTQ community has found? And then it's also a civil right. So now we're not just talking about LGBTQ rights, we're talking about civil rights. So then what happens to all of the battles we've won in terms of civil rights? Like, at this point, like I said, nothing much surprises me because it's just pure insanity. Like, who would think in America we would be having this kind of conversation? It's insanity to me.
Well, about down to our last couple of minutes, so maybe about a minute here, Scott. Just, you know, I think Tim in his email, Scott, was offering what he thought was kind of a compromise. Hey, you have all those rights. Just don't call it marriage. Call it something else. Scott, do you want to also explain why we're not going there?
Well, I want to know why it bothers him so much that it's called marriage, that it, in the eyes of the law, we're seen as equal. I understand people have religious beliefs beyond that, that marriage is between one man and one woman. But as, you know, stated before, we have evolved. Society has evolved into something different. So why don't we expand that? And then we can include everybody in that, and it can be equal for everyone. And I just, I want to know, my question is, what does my marriage have to do with your religious liberties? You know, my marriage is not affecting your religious liberties. If somebody who works for the government and they have to supply me with a marriage license and that goes against their religious beliefs, they, you know, they have a job to do to supply that to me, or they have to find something else that falls within the religious belief. I understand that they're convicted, but it's like, what does my marriage, how is that affecting you? You know, I've been in a committed relationship for over 12 years. Four of those, we've been married. We are contributing members of society. My marriage has nothing to do with your liberties, your religious liberties. So it's confusing to me why people are so passionate about my marriage that has nothing to do with them.
I'm down to 30 seconds, Barb and Roz, so you get the last 30. It's going to go fast. Go ahead.
Okay. Words are important. Marriage is a word. Words are important. Ask any 10-year-old kid who is called dumb by his classmates. He'll never forget it. Mm. If I can't say I'm married, I will never forget it.
Well, I agree with Roz. I agree with Roz, Evan, in that
taking the word marriage, attempting to take the word marriage away from us is just another way of holding on to the golden pot that they don't want to share.
Well, to all of you, Barb and Roz, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you. Much love to you. Thanks for sharing your perspective.
Kevin. Same to you.
Scott Failkowski, much love to you as well. It's great to talk to you, and we'll talk to both you and your husband soon, I hope.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Tamara Lee, thank you so much for the perspective. As always, we're indebted to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Evan.
Tamara Lee is the founder and lead consultant for Blackout Consultants, editor of Blackout Magazine. Outstanding perspective, and that's what we're looking at here. So this is an issue we will certainly keep our eyes on going forward. And we've got more connections coming up next.